Okay, so today we're going to discuss in Parshas Nitzavim a pretty simple theological question, and we're going to see different approaches as to how to answer the question, because Moshe, in the beginning of Parshas Nitzavim, he gathers everyone and he says in Perek Chavtes, we begin the Parsha, Atem nitzavim hayom kolchem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem, where you're standing here today, Roshichem, Shivtichem, Zikuchem, Shetuchem, Kol Yisrael. Everyone is gathered.
Okay, make it.
Everyone.
Close it. Yeah, okay.
Everyone here is, I might have to mute people here. Everyone here is gathered together, right? And Pasuk Aleph, why are they gathered together here? So, Le'avracha b'vris Hashem Elokecha uva aloso, to enter into a treaty with God. Pasuk Yud Beis, Lamano Kim Oscha Hayom Lo La'am Vahu Yelacha Lelokim, so that he may establish you this day as his people, and he will be a God for you. Okay, but now here's the kicker here. Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'lo Yidchem Levadchem Anochi Koreis Es Abritzel Vesel Azos. I am not making this covenant with you alone. Moshe is telling this that Kadosh Baruch Hu is not really making the covenant with Klal Yisrael alone. Pasuk Yud Dalet. He's making the covenant with those who are standing with God here today. And also, so we're making a covenant with those individuals who are not with us today. So that, of course, potentially raises problems, right? Because can the covenant that Moshe, or that God entered into with Klal Yisrael, can that bind subsequent generations? If I sign a contract with someone, are my kids responsible to fulfill the terms of the contract? Even if I say it's for me and also my kids. Are my kids...
Is this like Har Sinai, where all Bnei Yisrael was there, all future generations?
Right. So by the way, Ben, that we're going to see, so that is an approach. I think this, you know, this whole idea, we were all there, right? So it's not just a cutesy thing. Oh, we were all there, but it may actually be an attempt to answer this theological question. The same thing with Sinai, the same thing with here. How can Sinai, and how could this covenant by Arvos Moav right before Yisrael, how can that bind subsequent generations? So we will see, Ben, that some Mefarshim actually employ that idea. Question: what that means exactly? That we were all there, whatever that means. But that's not simply a nice, you know, idea. Oh yeah, we're all there. But that might actually be an attempt to try to deal with this question.
Rabbi?
Yeah. Okay. So Evan wants to argue. Very good. That maybe. Observing the Torah is, normally you require consent in order to you know, obligate someone in something. But maybe you're going to argue that this is such a zchus. Of course, it's only a zchus, a merit. Like in other words, I don't need your consent to confer a benefit upon you. So maybe that's what's going on here. Of course, the question is, what about the people who don't observe the Torah? Is that still a benefit or not? But we'll see that.
Didn't we just have a Gemara recently where it talked about whether or not it was better to be born or better not to be born?
Yeah.
And they finally came to the conclusion it was better not to be born, but once you're born, it's okay.
Yeah.
So one might say that this is not necessarily a schus for you, because this is putting a burden on you.
Okay, right. Okay, maybe. Right. Again, it could be different. Being once you're born, then maybe it might be a schus to be part of Klal Yisrael. Okay.
Or if you're going to make a nation, you have to get the other people who are not even here yet. You know, in other words, he wants to make a nation.
Right.
Before, the Pesukim before.
Right.
So you have to going to get the following generations.
Right. So in other words,
it's just one generation, it's not going to work.
Okay.
Okay. Rabbi, I was going to say that too. I mean, you have the heads of the tribes here, so you have the administration, And when an administration has signs a treaty with, you know, signs right. a treaty, you expect subsequent administrations to adhere by the treaty.
Right, right. Well, it depends, of course, if it's an executive, you know, was it an executive order versus it's passed by the Senate, by the Congress, right? Maybe more binding, okay? That's a political question. But no, okay, you're right. In other words, okay, so we've so far, you've suggested three different approaches as to why this covenant might be binding in subsequent generations. Maybe we were all there in some form. Maybe this might be a conferring a benefit, which doesn't require consent. And maybe somehow, again, it's not for individuals, it's with a nation. Okay. Okay. So let's see. I think all what you've suggested, some of what you suggested are found in different explanations. We're going to study, if we have time, four different mefarshim and how they deal with it. Abravanel has a very fascinating way of looking at it. Abravanel says the following, okay? So again, this is the question, how could you bind subsequent generations? So Abravanel says, okay, im hayosh shekfi hadin, zachir esadam shlo b'fanav, in chavim esadam shlo b'fanav, that you can provide a benefit to someone not in front of him, but you can't obligate someone not in front of him. V'she'ein adam morish shvul lebanav, and you can't inherit an oath to your children. V'otzlomer l'chayim b'shvul, you can't obligate a child in your own oath. So ein safek she'im adam kibel halva'a me'acher she'chay b'fironahu v'navar olam. So the Barbanel says, we got to read the whole piece before you ask on it. So the Barbanel starts off, he says the following. Let's say I borrow money from you. So I have to pay you back. Do my kids have to pay you back? So if my kids inherit my estate, so then I don't know how that works in secular law, I'm not sure. But if the halakha will say that if I owe you money, and God forbid if I pass away, so then my kids, or whatever, I have to pay, or my kids who inherit my estate also has to pay. Okay, so just like the kids inherit the parents' estate, they also have to repay the loans. And again, whatever the parents borrowed, is the children have to pay back. Even though they were not in the world yet. Okay, that's his first point. And based on this also, he wants to say something else. Let's say, someone owns a slave. Not talking about here the legitimacy of slavery, but if someone owns a slave, so someone... basically, he's providing the slave with, I guess, certain protections. He's conferring some benefits on the slave, but also he has certain rights to the slave. So, and this halachically is passed down to generations. Okay, so it's an Eved Kanani. So someone has a ownership rights over an Eved Kanani, and that would pass down to subsequent generations. So how does it apply? How do these two principles apply to what we're talking about? So Barbados is the following. By the way, it's okay if you don't like some of these answers, because there are four different answers that I'm going to share with you, or four different mefarshim. So obviously, you know, there's no one straight answer. So some of them perhaps are more compelling to some versus others. So I'm just sharing with you, and you can sort of pick what you like best, or if you like some of them. In any case, he says,
Rabbi, when the Abarbanel says that the children have to pay back the loan, isn't that only in the situation where they've inherited money?
Maybe, maybe.
So that if they didn't inherit any money,
right? Maybe. Might be right. Right. It's not 100% clear for what he writes, but that might be correct. V'yadu Hashem Yisparach Zachar B'Yisrael. Even they shall see a mikor barzel mitzrayim beis avadim. So God gave a conferred a benefit to Klal Yisrael. He took them out of the iron furnace of Egypt. Vehemu Miknam Vikinyanam. Hayu me ito me yado kmoshkazu kilibere soki avadai avadim avdai hemasher seisio some merit Mitzrayim. And basically, they and all their property belong to God. God says that you were slaves to Paro, and now you're my slaves. So God basically asserted ownership rights over the bodies of Klal Yisrael, just like Saul would assert ownership over an Eved Kanani. And God also took rights over our souls. Because he conferred a benefit also by giving us the Torah. The first bris at Sinai, they sprinkled blood over Klal Yisrael to show that basically the first was like God sort of, quote unquote, has property rights over us, over our body and our soul, because he conferred a benefit to us. And as a result of that, he has ownership rights over us, and therefore it continues for subsequent generations. And therefore, when we said Nasa v'nishma, what does it mean? So the way Abarbanel says is that when we said Nasa v'nishma, we sold ourselves into slavery to God, as it were, to enslave ourselves. And then, those rights sort of devolve, and those obligations follow not just to those who said Nasa v'nishma, the Bnei Yisrael Sinai, but even the subsequent generations. So that's the avdus. What about the halva, the load? And now in Parshat Nitzavim, Lefishata Rotzah Hashem Yisparach Lasso Simon Hem Chesed Vu Birushas Aretz. God wanted to give us Eretz Yisrael. So what happened? So that he goes on to say, a few lines down, he said that he didn't. God gave it to them. Lo b'matana, but three lines from the bottom of the source. Ki Matoras Halva. In a form of a loan. What's the loan? It's Li Haaretz. That was, what do you have to do? You have to serve God, and you not serve any other gods. So this obligation was sort of like at the end of Bris Sinai was basically Hashem. We the people sitting at Sinai agreed to enslave themselves to God, to give up their physical and spiritual selves to God. And therefore, that continues the subsequent generations, because God conferred a benefit in freeing us from Paro, in giving us, you know, a means to make our souls to give us a greater shlemus in our souls. And now in the Tzavim, it's more of a loan. God is sort of loaning us Eretz Yisrael, and as long as we serve God, then we can continue. We can continue living in Eretz Yisrael, which our residence on Eretz Yisrael is on loan. So as long as we continue serving God, then we get to continue to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's interesting. I mean, you know, it's a very unusual way that Bravadel looks at this, but that's how, from a pure contractual perspective. But what you had suggested, the other approaches actually are found in some of the other Mefarshim. So that was the barber now. Rabbeinu Bachai said,
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rabbi?
Yes. Yes, Evan?
Nowhere I can think of any place in Chumash does it say that Kadosh Baruch Hu lent the land to the Jews. It always says, Lechon Nesaticha. He always says he gave it. He never, any place, he says that he lent it. So what's the barber now? It's basis
right.
To say that he lent it.
Right. So here he writes, the Torah says what? V'ha'aretz lo si macher litzmisus. The land cannot be sold for perpetuity. Kili aretz. The land belongs to God. So the land belongs to God. So we are, man, right? And it's not. We are sort of renting it from God in a sense, or he's loaning us. That's what he says. Kili aretz.
Seems like more of a conditional gift.
Yeah. Okay. It's, yeah. I mean, It's interesting. He says the Bravidel says Hashem Yisroel Nasna Aleim Lomah Matana Kimas Haros Halva. So we can split hairs a little bit, and we can say it's a conditional gift versus a loan. Okay, I technically either way, yeah.
Rabbi, isn't it saying that just as Hashem is saying to us that we can't sell Eretz Yisrael in perpetuity,
right?
But the bris that Hashem is making with us or requiring us to observe, that is in perpetuity.
So again,
continue for our generation.
Yeah, so I would say the following. I don't know if I think we're going to see some of the other Mefarshim say that. I don't think that is how Abar Ben-El looks at it. He's very difficult. It's challenging Abar Ben-El. He doesn't look at it like that. That's certainly a position that the bris, that the covenant is in perpetuity. But that's not what he says. He looks at it in terms of we are like an Eved Kanani to God as the owner. That's how he looks at it. But that's certainly an approach, Alan, we'll see in some of the Mefarshim say like what you're saying. Let me move on. Rabbi de Bechaye says the following. Kolomar, I'm entering into a covenant with this nation, with this generation, because you are standing here before Hashem, our God. And he says, with someone who's not living here. So he says that Kolomar Bris Hazos. Even that I'm entering into the covenant, even with someone who's not here now, and he says why? Lefisha of Shoresh va'Bodim him anafim. So he says the parents who enter into the covenant are like the roots, and the children are what branches? Asim lotzis mikolach haShoresh. They're coming from the root. Valkein haya yochol haShoresh lahavi balas doros abayim. That those who enter the treaty are like the roots, and then the subsequent generation is just the branches. So they're obligated the roots. You're obligated whatever grows from it, right? So. And then Chazal, okay. So by the way, that is like what, I forgot who mentioned this, where someone mentioned that, you know, it was for the whole, who mentioned the whole nation? One of you said like the whole nation. So I think that's this idea. In other words, it's not any individual, but it's something that's reflected maybe in the whole nation, meaning what? That Hashem entered into a covenant with the roots, but it's the roots, whatever grows from the roots, that also applies. In other words, It's all part of one entity, one unit. We're going to see some others say it more explicitly. And then, Ben, you mentioned about everyone was there. All the souls that were created from Bereishis were there. And the body still was not created. They're not there with a body, but they're there with a nefesh. So he mentions, I think, the idea of the roots, you know, versus once you obligate the roots, you obligate that with what comes for it. It seems like it's not about individuals, but it's like a broader unit. And whatever happens to the roots happens to the branches. And secondly, the second answer is that we were all there at Sinai in some respect. The Maharal elaborates on this point. The Maharal says, Bevadai, even says Abrisha Karasim Avram Losar, that the covenant that God entered into with Avram, that is binding all subsequent generations. Sheri Lona San Gvul Vakits the Bris Hazeh. There's no end cutoff point for this covenant. What do you say? It's a Bris Olam. It's an everlasting covenant. V'achashikeinu, and if that's the case, why would you say that the covenant would be canceled because of one or two generations that sinned? That doesn't make any sense. And you skip a line. He says, therefore, in Parsha Atem Nitzavim, he says, etc. And he asks, how could God enter into a covenant with someone who's not born yet? It's clear. That's what you mentioned. He's more explicit than Rabbi de Bechaye, but I think it's the same idea. That God entered into a covenant with Avram because he's the beginning of the nation. He's not entering into a covenant with this individual, that individual, the other individual. Elarak mitzad ha'uma. He's entering into a covenant with a nation. Dahainu shem Yisrael. Kla Yisrael. But there is a kolo osam shem ata lefanav. And therefore, this includes those who are in front of them, who are around now. V'chein osam shelu achar kach. And even those who are born after. Shekulam shem uma Yisrael Yisraelim. Because all of them have the nation of Yisrael. I just want to point out that the morale, we won't read this inside, but the morale basically points out that why did God have to force the Bnei Israel to accept the Torah if they said Nasa v'Nishma? It's a famous question. And the way he addresses it, and he says, if you force it on them, there's a halacha that if someone forced himself upon a woman, and at her option, he's never allowed to divorce her. So since HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced himself, this is sort of, I think, Alan, you're saying, and since HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced, you know, Klal Yisrael to accept the Torah, it's in perpetuity, and you can't leave. Okay? So therefore...
In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't leave.
Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't leave. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't leave. So it is for our benefit. So again, I think the Maharal is somewhat similar, at least to part of Rabbeinu Bachaye. In other words, we have this like very unusual pshat of the Barbanel, where he talks about how, you know, all of Klal Yisrael, at least at Sinai, they enslaved themselves to God. So at Eved Kenani, the rights to own an Eved Kenani devolves to subsequent generations. Okay, that's a little unusual, and basically the in Itzavim, it's. It was a, Mark wants a conditional gift or maybe a conditional loan, whatever the case is, and that devolves upon subsequent generation. That's about Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbeinu Bachaye, I think, is similar to the Maharal in that this was a treaty with the nation as a whole. But the Rabbeinu Bachaye also mentions that we were all there. So that's also an idea. I want to finish up with the Malbim. The Malbim makes 3 points. The Malbim says that he wants to say that there are three ideas as to why, three reasons potentially why even though the parents accepted the Torah, then it continues to subsequent generations. So if you look about in the Malbim here, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down, he says number one is what the Rabbeinu Bachaye says. Mikari Minoseinu Shenafashos Hema Hanafashos Chai Bekayomim begins in Rome Kodim Shivol Gufada. Our soul, we believe that the souls are around before they come into the body. Vegab Achrei Mosa Adam Yisharu LaNetzach. And even after a person dies, the souls are immortal. Imlo Asu Biyosim Beguf Darisha Ayudei Ashayadav Tikares Meirtachaim. Unless you do something that causes the soul to be cut off. Okay. So therefore, all the neshamos were there. So, okay, again, is this theological approach, this idea, I think, is used to solve this theological problem of how can you bind subsequent generations? We were somehow all there, and he basically says the bodies. He goes on to say that the bodies were there, like the roots of the tree. And that and it can bind that which will grow later because the neshamos were there. So that's one approach. Okay? And then if we see in the middle of this letter beis, in the middle here, the beis. So this was Evan's point. Hachakira im yecholim lekabel gam livnei machrem hu rak al davar shuchov lahem. That it's only, when do we say that you cannot bind a subsequent generation? It's only when you're, when it's ultimately a chov, a chiv, an obligation for them. Aval davar shulo lizchus ulatova, but if it's good for them, vada yichom lekavaleim lizachosa. Certainly, you can confer to them because it's for their benefit. And the point is, l'chein, and therefore, he says, l'chein yachlu lekaval al doros aborim lekayim kol haTorah. And therefore, God can force subsequent generations to fulfill the Torah. Why? What's the purpose of the Torah? The purpose of the Torah is to strain our midos and to make us go on the right path. So we don't immersed in the in physical desires. And so we can fulfill our true purpose of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Now, there is Torah as a blueprint for us to lead a meaningful and ultimately a happy life. Okay, so that's his second answer. Okay, so other than Brava now, which is a fascinating approach, we sort of got the idea of the whole nation, right? God did not bind individuals. God, he bound an entire nation. We were all there, and we're conferring a benefit. But then let me finish with this last point. I'll just say it outside. The Malbim says the following. He makes a very obvious point. How can God bind subsequent generation? You know what? God can do whatever he wants. This is not a classic bris. A classic covenant is where both sides agree to something. Okay? No. God, right? Hashem Yisparach, Borei Kol Metzius, Umamzi Kol Nefashos, Uvyanu Nefesh Kol Chai. God creates everything. Right? And then he says, right? God can do whatever he wants. He can stop all of creation. If God commands something, right, does the one who's accepting it really need to agree? Like, why is there even this notion of agreement or forcing them or whatever the case is? Why did Hashem even need the Bnei Yisrael to enter into a covenant, to enter into a treaty? He doesn't need for Bnei Yisrael to agree. God is God. And God can simply force Torah and mitzvos on whoever he wants. The whole premise of the question is flawed. How could God obligate some generation? God can do whatever he wants. So you really have to ask a different question. And that is, why then did God make it so that the other the nation here, and at Sinai for that matter, would enter into a treaty? And to this, the Malbim says that the purpose of the covenant, the last three lines, Ki tzira chazak asher benafshem poel gam al yotzei chalatzav, that the purpose, that when we, it's even a few lines before that, that when, if because we accepted the Torah upon ourselves to do it, that it creates a greater incentive for us and subsequent generations to observe the Torah. Had God simply forced us to, you're going to accept the Torah, then maybe in subsequent generations, we're like, I don't need this. The fact that historically, we could look back, oh, I remember my ancestors accepted the Torah. We didn't have to. But psychologically, that would create a greater incentive for subsequent generations to continue what their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents and their ancestors started. So the purpose of the covenant was not to bind Klal Yisrael. God could do what he wants. God didn't need any covenant to enter. God could say, I want a nation that's going to be my ambassador to the world, and you're it. The reason why he entered into a covenant is for us psychologically, right? L'chein yishtarel shehem, right? He wanted to be sheyeh dvaro chazak v'kayam lahem. He wanted to be everlasting. And if we accept it upon ourselves, then it would be nishrashim. Gam benafshes doros abar. It would be a greater chance that this, the importance of keeping God, Torah mitzvos, would be implanted even on subsequent generations.